This is CliffCentral.com.
It's Wednesday, the 11th of July. Oh, you're going
to
tell me
you're allowed
to
sing? I think there should be a singing quota.
I wasn't even singing. That was making a
noise.
Oh,
speaking in rhyme.
I was making a noise.
I would like to speak in rhyme too.
Alrighty, so there's lots to get stuck into this morning. I read a really interesting article by Max Dupree about the EFF and how they're losing their way.
They had a way?
Yeah, I think they in the beginning. I mean, here's what he says, and I'm going to paraphrase him and just
Please read.
You one or two lines here. He says, is the EFF falling apart under pressure? The EFF's wheels came off a bit last week. Perhaps this 8% party's honeymoon with the media and a chunk of the voting public is coming to an end. People who took notice of EFF chairperson Dadim Pofu's outrageous behavior at the Nugent Commission into SARS and Julius Malema's press conference last week must now seriously suspect that the party boasts that it is a corruption fighter and that those are just a facade to conceal their skeletons in the cupboard. Well, we know, for example, that journalists asked him about this link that the EFF has to a cigarette smuggler and known tax dodger. And when questioned about this, Julius responds by saying, you know, you're all liars and you don't report the truth and you're part of Stratcom version 2 and, you know, a whole lot of threats and cajoling and naming of journalists and saying that they are, you know, proponents of counter-revolutionary whatever. You know, they're full of shit. They just really are, and they talk a lot of nonsense. And as soon as it comes to answering a question about who really funds you, you should be able to say, well, we're funded by X, Y, and Z.
True.
And if you can't answer those questions, you're obviously hiding something. But it was interesting because Dalim Pofu threatened Pierre de Vos last week on Twitter. Remember, he said, if you don't remove an article, which he had found defamatory, insulting and possibly racist from the public space in which you published it, by 12 o'clock expect legal action. And you see, when you threaten something like that, you've got to go through with it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, people are going to think, well, you're just blustery and you talk a lot of nonsense. Anyway, Pierre de Vos did ignore him, and of course, nothing happened. So, I don't know why, but you know, the article from Max Dupree ends with an interesting statement. He says, there are some in the ANC leadership that fear Malema and his brand of reckless populists. And that says more about the ANC than it does about the EFF. Isn't that an interesting observation? I mean, this is why we have journalists, because they're meant to decode all the stuff that's going around us so that we can figure out what makes sense and what's important and what isn't. And Max Dupree has a very good ear for this stuff. It's one of the reasons he was regarded as being one of the best journalists during the old regime. He was one of those people who stood up to power. He reported things that got him into huge amounts of trouble. And he spoke very frankly about Pierre Viabuerta and the National Party. And then he spoke very frankly about the ANC, and now when he speaks about the EFF, they say he's a, you know, Stratcom guy. Stratcom was the old apartheid regime's press and communications vehicle, basically.
I just think that if we look at it, to be completely honest, I think that the EFF haven't had enough time battling, basically being on the battlefield. So I think that they're quite naive in some instances, and they just take everything to heart when it happens. Whereas the ANC kind of have had years of practice of lying, of corruption, of the whole works. Do you know what I mean? Of minimal service delivery. Whereas now, I'm being quite honest, whereas when they get attacked, they honestly, they take it to heart and must fight everything with the vigor that they fight real issues. And I don't think they should be doing that. For me, I had so much faith in the EFF, and now they just seem like they're falling apart at the seams because they take so many things personally and to heart on a personal level as well as a political level. Some things you just don't have to pay attention to, like there are issues you don't have to fight.
It's a super good point, and it's kind of analogous to like how, at least for me, like I'm sure a lot of other people, as you kind of grow up, your behavior on social media. Like someone disagrees with you, you've got to fight them.
Exactly.
There's someone posts an article you don't agree with, whatever, you got to, or if somebody's being lynched in the public, you've got to join the bandwagon. And as you get older, you give less of a fuck. And also you realize like, well, this is pointless trying to get like upset about everything. Let's just pick our battles and try and quietly fight those.
And if you're in the wrong, don't draw more attention to something that you know you're going to get busted.
Dig yourself deeper, yeah.
Now you're suing people, you're keep quiet. Like, it's
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Like, now so we really want to know what the link is.
The interesting story here that's emerging from what you and Poppy have just said, Gord, is you don't need to fight every battle. Like, there is a
and
lot.
And what Poppy says, dig yourself deeper in the process.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world that is not worth your energy. Mm. You've got to think very carefully these days because this is a challenge for all of us. And I'm really glad this came up because it's something that's been on my mind for a while. We have so many things that demand our attention right now. If you are alive in 2018 and even barely conscious, you have a billion messages headed your way every single day from advertisers, from brands, from marketers, from influencers, from social media commentators, from
the infrastructure of your life, your bosses, your coworkers,
your boss, your family, your friends, everybody. You've got so much coming at you. You have to be, if you want to be an effective human being, you have to be so good at sifting what is, first of all, prioritizing. So deciding, well, these 10 things need to be paid attention to. The rest we can throw away for today.
Yeah.
And then also deciding which ones you weigh with more importance and credibility, which ones you weigh with less. That's what's a really important thing to do today. If you can get that right, I reckon you could be a superstar. You could be anything you want to be. You can be rich. You could be powerful. You can be important. You can make a difference in other people's lives. You can contribute to society. But doing that is a lot easier said than done.
Yeah. And there are people, there are definitely people who fundamentally disagree with you about every single thing you hold sacred.
Right.
They may be right, they may be wrong, but they're out there. And even if you could, through arguing or in rare cases that I've seen, reason, change their minds, by the time you've changed someone's mind, which you probably won't, five more with those exact views will have been born, grown up, and taken that stance. There are people who
it's
are
like
wrong.
A hydra.
There are people who disagree with you.
Yeah.
Fucking deal with it. Another thing that a lot of people who I find like a lot of a thing that I've heard clever people say many times in my life is don't subscribe to the news. Don't get the newsletter. Don't listen to the news report. If something major happens, if there's a fucking tsunami that kills millions
you'll
of people,
know.
You'll find out about it. You don't need to know your local municipality are up in arms again about whether to paint the fucking sign blue or green, and now it's an issue of race, and now about just who cares? Major things that affect you. Follow your hobbies and your passions and leave the rest because it's information that only distracts you from your actual life.
Yeah, I think this is the real question of our age. It's like, how do we begin to understand the best? And there are tools available to us. There's technology available that will help us sift all that stuff so that we don't have to spend our time thinking about and being fixated on dumb things. Again, maybe it helps that I was away for a week because
Like Gord was.
Yeah.
I was waiting for it.
Because you see, the Brits are obsessed with two things at the moment. Two things only. Brexit and football. And I don't even think it's in that order. It's football, 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 and then Brexit.
Wow.
That's all
they're
really...
standing on football and you look down, you can just see the top of Brexit crowning.
Just, exactly. So here's the deal. If that's all they care about right now, then I want to know what we should... prioritizes our two top things at the moment.
Education and infrastructure.
You think it's
educate the fuck out of everybody, build the shit that the country needs to run nicely, and the rising tide will lift all ships, as somebody said earlier.
Yeah, but I think we should just be looking at disbanding our government because none of those things are possible with this horrible mafia in charge of things because they are the downfall of everything.
But the tricky thing is that once we disband, we don't have options thereafter either. So it's not like there's someone
point,
that we can say,
point.
Pick right. that person.
Like Moletsi Mbeki said yesterday, he said, it would be fine if we, you know, could, if we had someone to vote for.
Right.
There's no one to vote for.
Pump all the money, however much is being siphoned, however much is being, you know, frivolously spent, whatever. Pump what can get pumped into, it's one of my life philosophies, into education. Educate the shit out of kids.
Good. Yes. We spend more per capita on education than any other country.
Well, see that it gets implemented well, because our educations are shite.
We don't have the people to do it properly.
Pay them, train them, figure it out.
No, because if God, members of SADTU don't care about producing smart school leavers. Okay. They don't care about educating people either. They care about their salaries.
Well, in a fairy tale world, I believe if you started with little kids and pumped education as hard as possible, the majority, not all, but the majority of the other problems would sort themselves out over the course of 10 years.
It's a lovely idea, but how do you get rid of cancer? You attack cancer. You don't give the cancer patient great books to read.
I'm not saying there aren't other problems. Gareth asked if things that you could address. For me, it would be education and infrastructure.
Okay, but we're getting lost here, because the real question is, what are the things we should focus on, and what are the things that we've been focusing on that we need to stop focusing on? Like, I think here's a great article by Solly Moyang, right, who I think is also one of the better thinkers in this country. He says, South Africa, like all countries, needs to stop sending bad messages to the rest of the world all the time. Some of these messages are intended through all forms of country promotional campaigns to attract tourists and investors. Others are not intended to be sent out there, but they find their way there nonetheless, thanks to social media. Often, the unintended messages are the ones with the most potential to undermine the intent of government propaganda, other promotional messages, and consequently harm the country's image. When this happens, all the public money spent in expensive global promotional campaigns turns to the biblical seed thrown on barren soil. It becomes wasteful expenditure. South Africa is a brand, one in competition with many others for foreign direct investments, tourism, and a drive to attract wealthy foreign students, etc. It is reasonable, says Solly, to imagine that South Africa would also like to be considered an attractive, stable, reliable, and safe host for regional headquarters of global corporations or their labor-intensive manufacturing arms, as well as other multilateral organizations. There is a lot of prestige that comes with this, he says. If achieved, it would help the country build a stable, growing economy. If, on the other hand, none of these benefits come to South Africa, we can be sure we will go elsewhere, to a better prepared country. The world, here he says, doesn't owe South Africa anything. Rwanda, for instance, we spoke about them just yesterday, is increasingly viewed as a go-to country in Africa for all sorts of exciting reasons, notwithstanding the refusal of its president to leave office. When Ramaphosa's turn came to address the gathered leaders of the Commonwealth, he paid homage to Nelson Mandela's South Africa. For a short time, we chose to focus on the beauty of the message we'd been so hungry to hear, rather than the deteriorated socioeconomic and political environments in South Africa. So he goes on, he basically talks about this Tumamina and how we confuse the world with our messaging. He says at the end, we cannot be a winning country while we keep sending out confusing messages about who we really are and what we want to be known for as a country and to be associated with. I mean, I think that's important. So, you know how people talk about their personal brand? Everybody on Twitter and everybody on Instagram and everybody on Snapchat now has a personal brand. And some of these brands are like, you know, they've got 10 followers, but they've got a brand. Anyway, the point is, what is our brand? What should South Africa stand for? And I'm not asking for answers now, but it's something to think about. And I thought when I read Sully's article earlier, he makes some very good points. Go and check it out. I think it's on News 24. And tell me what you think of that. Tell me where you think we should be positioned. Because we see at the moment a not particularly positive outlook on the economy. We see a lot of political shenanigans where people are trying to be ever more populist with each other to try and win votes in a desperate attempt to win over a public that just aren't very pleased with what's going on at the moment. And then we have what the rest of the world sees us as.
Which is what?
I don't know. I just don't think it's anything near.
I think shithole comes into it. I know it's a blanket term.
I don't think it's what it was 10, maybe 15 years ago.
And yet our profile has gone up. I mean, obviously, you know, Nelson Mandela being like one of the greatest humans in history and what happened. Like, our profile politically in that has always been quite high, but in popular culture, we've had a bit of a surge since, like, Sholto Copley was, like, playing South Africans in big movies, and Die Antwoord, much as I can't stand them, really, like, yeah, Trevor, he on the cover of Time magazine. You know, in terms of pop culture, we've kind of broken through at last,
yeah,
to an extent. So that has raised our profile. And I think also to a lot of people, we're a tourist destination. It's lions and pretty beaches. So there's a few different things, but I think we'll kind of be known for at least another generation as the country of Nelson Mandela and the and apartheid.
I think we could do better to capitalize on that.
Sure, but
this is where I'm – and don't think that this means that we look at ourselves in isolation. I mean, America is going through a bit of a branding crisis at the moment with Trump. And – as I mentioned earlier, in England, in Britain, where I was just the other day, they don't know what they stand for, whether they're in or out of the EU, what makes you British, what doesn't make you British, immigration, blah, blah, blah. So you see all these countries at the World Cup, and this is kind of where I started thinking about this stuff. And you think, well, what is Croatia known for?
And Game of Thrones.
Stealing the whole of Bosnia's beach.
Yeah, that too.
Oh, jeez.
Truth be told.
Have you seen the map of Croatia? It's a country, yeah. And then it's got this little, like the letter Q with a really long, if the tail of the Q was really long, just to literally, like, cordon off the whole of Bosnia's coastline. Anyway, like a tadpole.
Yeah.
That's what Croatia looks like.
So that's what we know about Croatia. But when you think of countries at the World Cup or anything else, what do you think about first? And what three words? This is not too much of a difficult job for anybody to do. Somewhere today, whether it's on social media or whether you just do it quietly on your own, try to figure out what three words you think South Africa should be in people's minds.
So, like, an example, if I understand you correctly, would be like, for me, Holland would be like weed, tulips, nice buildings.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, three words, three phrases, whatever it is that you need to describe, but you only got three.
But I think for us, it should always be the powerhouse of Africa. If you want to invest in Africa, this is the gateway. If you want to be involved in the continent, we are the first port, the first stop where things originate from.
Maybe, might have been at a time, Nigeria's economy has eclipsed ours now.
Yeah,
but that's just it. But that's just it. That's where we should be.
I agree.
Be realistic. So what is our big thing?
What would you like it to be? I mean, let's try and be optimistic here because we've got so much negative stuff in the news. And I'm kind of turned off by that. I really am. I'm not in the mood to wallow in misery about South Africa being this or being that. Let's try to find the three things that we think this country should stand for and the three things that we'd like to be branded as.
I agree with Gord in that even though we go through some of the toughest times, we do have some of the most talented people who seem to rise above all the murky water.
Right.
So, for instance, cricket in terms of sport as well. In terms of entertainment as well, we do have that one odd person like a Trevor back in the day. It was Terry when they were in Tsotsi when they won the Oscar and all of that kind of stuff. So I do think that there's a level of talent and excellence that just doesn't always come to the fore that we don't often recognize.
Starting to rise to the top.
But at the moment, there's just so many talented people in different spaces and not traditional spaces that I think we can recognize and be grateful for.
And they're wearing it. Like, you know, Trevor's wearing the fact that he's South African.
Yeah.
You know, Dave Matthews is fully South African, but he just never wanted to kind of push that into the background of his personal brand always for whatever reasons, which I'm not here to criticize, but it was never a South African thing was always played right down. Elon Musk also, you know, South African as you get, but people know that, but he never, it doesn't make it part of his personal brand. Trevor, like, wears it. Die Antwoord wear it. You know, we got, and Sholto Copley wears it. Half the characters he plays are South Africans in major movies. So it's pretty cool that that's happening.
So, yeah, for me, it's just a level of excellence that I've never experienced before. And it's young people.
So everybody's got some homework then. You know, come up with these three words or these three phrases. And, you know, it might just be a fun exercise to do with other people at the office this morning. Might be something that gets people talking about what they really like about the place. Because we often get so mired in the bad stuff that we tend to forget why we like being here.
Yeah, I don't know how long the sentences or phrases are allowed to get, but I wish it would be really fun people, really diverse cultures are trying their best and mostly succeeding to get along, and awesome shit to come and see, awesome, beautiful shit to come and do and see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Africa's shining star where everyone can get together, like you said, the diversity, the incredible landscapes, the incredible experiences, and the fact that it can all be done together with such diversity.
And that aside from our like historical differences, which still divide us, the vast majority of South Africans, if you put aside their political genders, whatever, are fun people.
Yeah.
We're fun across all of our cultures.
I've often said that one of my favorite things about going away is coming back and being able to see people who like talking to each other, who greet each other with a smile, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's the little things sometimes. It's not always the big ones.
I said the same thing about like Spain. You know, like people there are so cooperative and polite and so sort of quick to like move when they need to move and like, you know, help you pick your thing up, but they're not friendly. There's a huge difference between friendly and very cooperative and functional together. Like they will, I don't know, they work like a machine, and it's a kind of niceness, it's a kind of politeness, but it's not very fun.
All right, I want to play you something quickly. I think you might be interested in this. I'm very interested in this new podcast that is launching soon. What if you were told that you were going to live to 200.
Am I fat and physically tired all the time? Sorry.
Gareth, it's, wow.
Yeah. I'm ready.
I would be some superhuman, but also like, what's the, would you have to have like three careers, four careers?
You might have to retire two or three times.
That's exciting.
But you're aging slowly. So in other words, you don't get to 90 and live 90 and then you like this living skeleton gasping for each breath for another 100 years.
I mean, listen to this quickly. This is Sunlum have put this together, actually. They have come up with a new podcast series called The 200-Year-Old. So imagine that we're looking forward to the year, what would it be, 2218. Because you could be, they say that the first person to live to 200 has already been born.
What if I told you that you were going to live to 200 years old? Just think of what you could achieve. Would you even retire? Or would you retire more than once? How would living for so long change us?
My name is Sam Gwenya, and this is The 200-Year-Old.
A future-facing podcast based on leading science and experts. As Sunlum turns 100, they're looking ahead to plan better for the future. Tune in to the200yearold.co.za.
That sound cool?
But this is exactly your dream though, Gareth.
It is my dream.
200.
Well, this is why I so much love this idea. Imagine living to 200 but not being really old for 100 years. Think about not feeling a day over 30 for 150 of those years.
Okay, now it sounds more interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I'm in.
If you think it's nonsense, well, the 200-year-old is here based on leading science and expert opinion, as you heard in that clip, featuring the voices of Nambi Tampulwana and Taphelo Mokoena. It's the story of Lesedindaba, told in the year 2218. It's a podcast that pulls back the curtain to the world of the future. This is entirely possible. They're not making this up and pulling it out of thin air. I've been talking about this for how long? People like Ray Kurzweil and Peter Diamandis, they talk all the time about how we could live long enough to live forever. But certainly the first 200-year-old, according to most scientists who are interested in this stuff, is already alive.
How crazy.
And entirely possible.
Yeah, I mean, assuming the world continues to, we don't end up in some dystopian apocalypse. Yes, it's pretty amazing
well,
stuff.
Well, it's unlikely that we're going to do that to ourselves, since our survival instinct will trump most other things, even our stupidity.
Yeah. Except for when the stupid people have the nukes, but this is going off the topic. Please continue.
Listen, the stupid people who have the nukes, they're going to be other people who try to persuade them not to use them, and eventually we'll find ways around it. Like, believe it or not, like Donald and Kim have tried to make happen in North
From
Korea.
From your mouth to Hetfield's ears.
So, I think this is a really interesting discussion. We talk about genes.
Mm.
Now, can I get a little scientific?
Okay.
Please do. I actually was about to ask for the science.
Okay,
bad.
So at the end
of... your version of singing.
At the end of all our...
Whose version? Yes.
At the end of all of our chromosomes are things called telomeres. They're the sort of untidy, knotted and frayed ends of our chromosomes. Every time a cell divides, those chromosomes copy the other half of themselves and make a new cell.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, occasionally, and this is what they believe is the locus of, or the place of aging in cells, is that those telomeres become increasingly frayed and distorted and they copy less effectively every time.
It's like photocopying on an old photocopy machine. If you photocopy the copy and then photocopy the copy.
That's exactly right. It starts getting more and more gray and less black and white. So this is what they say is where aging takes place, is in those telomeres at the end of your chromosomes. If that's true, and we have good reason to believe it's true because this is what scientists have spent a huge amount of time researching most recently, we should be able to help those telomeres to be more resilient and to copy more effectively and make less mistakes in their copying and leave less material behind so that we get a more accurate copy.
Yeah, and stem cells is also a thing because, you know, that originally they were like, they were trying to harvest them from newly created fetuses because essentially stem cells cause new body parts to be created and grown. And that, when you're in an embryonic phase and as a child, that's when you have lots of them because your body is creating itself. And then when you reach adulthood, it kind of stops to create itself. But they've, you know, and then the whole controversy came about whether or not you can create embryos but now they can pull them out of your nose because your nose always repairs itself throughout your life inside.
Correct. And there are parts of your body that keep regenerating ad infinitum. They don't start to go backwards. They don't
grow
start
themselves
to retard.
Back.
Right. So those parts of your bodies that are constantly regenerating themselves, this is the place that people are interested in using the normal cell division as a means of expanding that kind of process to other parts of the body. And the scientists are becoming increasingly adept at making this happen. We spoke not so long ago about gene editing and CRISPR technology, which allows you to find certain parts of the DNA strand. What's happened? Have I lost everybody?
No, I was about to say, I know gene editing and CRISPR technology, but then I didn't say that because I'd get in trouble. Gene editing and CRISPR technology.
Have I lost anybody?
No,
I
think he's just being corny. It was a bad pun, and I'm sorry. Please continue.
They use this to be able to insert important bits of information back into the chromosome and into the DNA strand, and to take out parts that are potentially dangerous. They can do this in embryos, as Gord just said, so that you could prevent certain diseases. And again, this is becoming and all of this knowledge is expanding exponentially because you've got, instead of one scientist working in a laboratory at some university, a well-funded university with his team or her team, you now have teams all over the world collaborating. And as stuff is discovered, it's shared instantly.
Yeah, and then peer-reviewed instantly. And
correct. So we're able to do a lot more in less time.
So the idea is like, if you had if you were to create an embryo where the blood types and all of that were compatible with you, and you had a body part or an issue, whatever, that was not working correctly and just wasn't repairing itself right, if you were to put those stem cells, and this is obviously a very sort of basic explanation, but if you were to put the stem cells in that place where it's not regenerating nicely, it would start behaving more like a child's body and creating new, better, fresh stuff, meat, whatever, bones, then trying to keep fixing the broken thing and not quite having the youth to do it.
How crazy. Yeah.
So that's also why, you know, kids are so resilient. Their skin repairs better than anyone over the age of 30.
And I mean, they grow. Doubles in size every year for the first 5 years of your life.
So there's a lot of really exciting stuff going on there. And that's not even to go into the nanotechnology, which they're working on at the moment. There's so much interesting technology, science, philosophy, theory, and mathematics, frankly, that comes into this, that it is not impossible to imagine that we'll live to 200.
Yeah, they talk about amortality because you would still be able to be killed. So you wouldn't be immortal, but you could, as long as nothing killed you and you stayed.
It's like trees.
Yeah, exactly like trees.
Unless something kills a tree doesn't die.
Yeah, it's many species of tree. Yeah. But amortality is like, yeah, you can be killed, and if you lose access to these systems that keep you young, you will then grow old and die. But assuming you still stayed in the program and had all the resources and you didn't get hit by a bus or struck by lightning or shot through the head, you'd live forever.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't that excite you?
That show Altered Carbon on Netflix rules.
I do meet people who say to me, I don't want to live to 300. But if you could live to 300 or 200 or even 100, not have any physical ailments, wouldn't that be amazing?
I'm ready for it.
Yeah, as soon as you throw that caveat in there, then
a huge caveat. Yeah.
It's rather large.
Yeah, I share Ben's thing of like not wanting to be very old for very long in this life.
Because I don't want to be a functional 100-year-old. I want to be essentially a very long-standing 40-somethinger. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I was one of those people who didn't like the idea of coming 200 years old because I thought they were just barely holding on to extending our lifespan. But if you are
functional,
you're at the peak of your health, you are still functioning well.
But we have such a short window on time. You know, now 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds are not old like they used to be. A 70-year-old and 80-year-old can do all stuff. The things that a 40-year-old and 50-year-old used to be able to do. We don't even realize that in 3 or 4 generations, we've already expanded our longevity.
Yeah, a wonderful ex-girlfriend of mine, her grandfather lived to be 99, and he did carpentry. He looked after himself. He cleaned his own dishes. He didn't go at pace, but he looked after his shit was working, even though he looked very old and went very slowly. His shit was working. Only he got kind of looked like he was on his way out for the last 6 months of his life, and then he died. He broke down over 6 months and then passed at 99, which is frustrating, but still. I mean, and this is not a person this is not a person from the stem cell era. This is an oak who saw like world wars.
Well, think about it. Madiba would have been 100 this year.
That's right.
Yes, see.
Born in 1918.
And no stem cells in sight.
None. All right, so you've got to listen to this podcast, and we'll put it up on cliffcentral.com. You can find all the info there, a future-facing podcast based on leading science experts. As Sanlam turns 100, they're looking ahead to the future. Visit the200yearold.co.za. That's the200yearold.co.za to listen, or you can find out more. All the links will be up on cliffcentral.com.
I listened to this podcast last night, I'm just going to say. I'm going through a resurgence listening to a whole bunch of podcasts.
Good.
And this topic alone will give you conversation topics for days. And I listened to it, and straight away I was thinking about different avenues and what they say. And it's so superbly well researched that you will have a wealth of conversation for after listening to this.
Thank you very much. There's an endorsement from Ben.
Solid.
Yeah, very nice. All right. CA is Siv on the line. You know Siv Ngesi, right?
Yeah, sure. Siv.
We love Siv, so we want to find out how he is, because apparently he was held up at gunpoint in the Joburg CBD yesterday.
Yes.
Jeez.
Did you hear about this, Poppy?
I did. It was supposed to be in my 5 things you need to know, and then you all got carried away.
You got Siv. To like 2.
Siv.
Yep, what's up?
How you, dude?
Good, and you?
Good, 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 good. First of all, are you all right?
No, I'm good, thanks, but honestly, I'm good.
Jesus, man. What happened?
We were in like... So we're in like the CBD area, and I'm with like my Cape Town friend, and I'm like, guys, I'm in Durban quite often. This area is not the safest in the world. This is not Cape Town CBD. And then like, I'm on my phone, I'm in the driver's seat, and then there's a driver. I have to add that the driver was an old white man, so he just didn't look a bit like a target. So it was a bit like, and then I'm on my phone looking down, and then I hear a knock on the window.
Oh God.
Phone. I look up and I think, what the fuck? So then I throw my phone on the side, and then they point at me going, phone. We saw your phone in your hand. And then I start looking for my phone in my bag. So I start scratching through my bag going, I'm looking, I can't find it. Let me find this phone. I'm looking. And then they hit the driver on the right with a gun and then took his phone and the GPS phone. And they were using for GPS.
Yeah.
So there were 2 phones. And then they pointed the gun at me. And then they tried to take the car key from the ignition.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, then we're in trouble. So then I opened the window and I screamed. I screamed, cops! Here come the cops! Oh, the police! Thank God! And then they looked at me and they ran away.
Was that like a legit bluff?
Solid bluff.
That's a move, bro. Yeah.
It was a bluff. There were no cops. But I knew, and then I just screamed, here come the police. Oh, here's the police, thank God. And then they ran away with 2 phones.
Now, I'm interested. So obviously this was like an Uber or a taxi driver.
No. It was, I was doing a gig in Joburg.
Oh, okay. So you had a driver.
I had my people I'm working with.
All right. And they had 2 phones stolen, but you refused to give up your phone, right?
It's stupid, yes. Before you carry on, I'm waiting for you. Everyone has told me it's stupid, it's irresponsible. What the hell are you thinking? Don't ever do that again. Yes, yes. But in the moment, you did seem like the right thing to do.
You just felt confident enough that you could handle this situation, that you didn't need to hand over your phone, and there's another way around this. You obviously were thinking on your feet. You bluffed the guys. You managed to get away. But how are you feeling right now?
It's weird because everyone is obviously been calling, and saying, how do you feel? How do you feel? And I honestly say, I grew up in the township of Kukuletu in Cape Town. Crime is an everyday thing, and it doesn't justify it, but I saw people getting, I grew up seeing people's phones get stolen, things get stolen, people getting hit. And, my grandmother had a Sabine going up. So this kind of stuff was like around us, man. So the other two were quite shocked. There was a girl in the car who was crying. But I honestly don't feel shaken up, and I'm quite weirdly shocked at the calmness of the situation. So I really don't feel it. And people are like, "Oh, it's going to affect you later," but I don't really feel quite frazzled about it, really.
Do you see it all happen in slow motion when this kind of thing happens? Because I know lots of people have been through hijacking attempts and armed robberies.
Do you know what it reminds you of?
Yeah.
So it reminds me of, I played rugby and I played water polo in high school.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that when I played goalkeeper and when someone shoots and they shoot, they're standing in front of me and they're shooting and everything just slows down and I could see the ball coming and then into the net and like, oh damn it, I should have stopped that because I saw it in slow motion. Very slow, but you could feel that, like, one thing I do admit that no one should ever do what I did, because you can feel how nervous they are.
Yeah.
Their energy is quite nervous, and their energy is quite scared.
Yeah.
Their energy, it's not as confident as you imagined from a movie. It's not confident. It's quite like, and then they knock on the window so you can hear that a gun is hard.
Mm.
But you don't feel like, it doesn't, there's no like enforcing force over you that's like, who do you think you are? Like, it's not that.
Right. In other words, quite like, if you're more confident than they are, you might be able to find another way. I mean, I'm not saying, again,
I don't recommend it. No. It's just they were quite confused as well because they knocked on the window and saw me playing on my phone, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they seen the gun comes out, and then I look for my phone in my bag, and then they were a bit like, what is this kind of thing? And then I was just like, but then when I knew, they tried to take the key out of the ignition.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, then we're in cuck there. So then we're stuck in the middle of the things with CBD with the car ignition thingy. But I don't really recommend it to everyone.
No, sure.
Don't do it again.
No, well, listen, I'm very glad you're okay, but interesting sort of outcome that you managed to chase them away with a complete bluff about the cops.
I once dressed you in a superhero outfit and shot you so you were flying, Siv. So you are a bit of a superhero. But I think a key takeout is the perpetrators are possibly on the verge of panic. So don't panic because you'll panic them further.
There are, because it's so weird. In Cape Town, there's a lot of tick involved crimes, right?
Yeah.
In Cape Town, so they're quite ticky.
You don't want to get those guys too upset.
Yeah, you don't want to get, see, because those guys, that tick is not a nervousness. That is like, I want to eat. I need more drugs.
Yeah, there's no rational thought.
And another thing, they were polite as hell.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't like malicious. Like, it was just quite like, phone, kind of thing. It's quite like, they didn't say anything else. It's just phone. But yeah, this is one of those ordeals that in every day in South Africa go about.
Listen, first thing first, don't come up here and cause shit for us, all right? Go back to Cape Town, keep your trouble there. Second of all, don't go driving in dangerous neighborhoods at night, you idiot. And third of all...
No, it wasn't night. It wasn't night. It was 4:30.
Stop it.
4:30 p.m.
How dare you? You come here and bring your criminality. And third of all...
I live in Joburg.
Third of all, we're very happy that you're okay.
Yeah, that's all good. Thanks, guys.
All right, man. Nice to speak to you, Siv. We must get together sometime.
Yeah.
Cool to catch up.
Yeah, Cliff.
Yeah.
Cliff, you're doing a great job, buddy. Enjoy.
All right. Cheers, bro. Bye-bye. There we go. Siv and Gessie. Got through that. listen, it's tough out here. There's people trying to get your stuff all day. Yeah, we're just talking about this yesterday.
Same thing happened to Darren Scott a couple of days ago.
What?
At the intersection on the way to Four Ways.
But Four Ways. I mean,
they were demanding he takes off his wedding. Had a ring on his finger.
Yeah.
And he said that, like Sid was saying, they're nervous people, and he really feared they were going to chop his finger off because it didn't happen.
Jeez,
he wouldn't get off, and they kept demanding to give the ring. And yeah, he said it was obviously a very scary experience. This was later, and it was dark.
Also,
guys with guns.
To have your finger potentially chopped off for a male wedding ring, I mean, they're very seldom diamond encrusted things. It's like, you know, a lot of women carry around wedding rings worth tens or even more of hundreds of thousands of rand. That I understand.
Just this morning, Poppy's wearing jewelry worth about 25,000 rand.
Can't get it off, chop it off. But a little gold circle, it's like. In Four Ways, we clap you as a welcome. But I mean, that's horrible stuff. But also keep in mind, and obviously the statistics prove that we have a real problem with it in South Africa, and I'm not taking any light away from that. But you can go on holiday to the most first world of first world countries, and on the day you arrive, get held up at gunpoint. I've got mates, South African mates, who've been like mugged or burgled or robbed in England, that kind of thing. We're not the only country with crime, but it is dangerous out here.
All right. Donald Trump, can we just quickly refer to him? So he made a nomination to the Supreme Court of Appeal. I think a guy called what was his name? Callahan. I'm tempted to say Callahan. I've never heard of the guy. He's a circuit court judge in Washington, D.C. Anyway, the Kavanaugh. Thank you very much. Brett Kavanaugh. And before he'd even nominated him, the people who organized the Women's March put out a press release, but instead of taking out the XX that they'd put in to complain about whoever Trump had nominated, they lifted his XX.
Oh, gosh.
So embarrassingly, this reveals that they would have been unhappy with any choice. It was just the fact that it was his choice.
Now, just take me through that again slowly. So they had pre-prepared to cross out letters of the name of whoever.
They prepared a statement, the following kind of statement. We are very unhappy that Donald Trump has nominated XX.
Oh, it was a placeholder for
Supreme Court. So basically, we're getting ready to be outraged, even though we don't know what his decision is, which kind of undermines the outrage.
Or there might have been a short list of candidates, and they knew they hated all of them. But I still take your point that that's pretty indicative of how people deal with outrage these days.
So Donald is leaving with Melania on a big trip this week. They're going to visit Russia and Europe, and then the UK. I mentioned that having been in the UK, they're very nervous about him coming there because London doesn't really like Trump, and he's expecting a warm welcome. He might not get such a warm welcome, but listen to this quickly because this is quite interesting. This is Donald talking about what he expects from the trip and who he thinks is going to be the easiest to deal with. Let me just play this for you quickly. Hang on a second. There we go.
UK, which is in some...
All right.
So I have NATO... I have the UK, which is in somewhat turmoil.
And in somewhat Putin. Turmoil.
Frankly, Putin may be the easiest of them all. Who would think?
Frankly, Putin may be the easiest of them all. Who would think?
In what?
To
know.
Deal with.
But he says that he's really not looking forward to this by the sound of things.
Yeah. The easiest to Trump.
I
wasn't even intended as a pun.
Gee, you're really off. You full of puns this morning, huh?
It wasn't intended. Okay.
Look at you. Look at you.
On a roll here, Gord.
All right. Some other things that are going on that I thought we needed to talk about. There was the birthday of the RAF, and I mentioned how just yesterday I was talking about how Jan Smuts, our own former prime minister, was the one who founded the RAF. He helped establish it. And they had a big ceremony, and Sia's best friends, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, were there as well. I thought we needed to refer to that, right? But that's quite something. I mean, we've only really been flying humans for just over 100 years. If you think about it. Now, as a military operation, the RAF, I think, is the world's oldest air force. Maybe, if you have better information, then please share it with us. But I think they might be the world's oldest air force, which means really that we've only seen 100 years of things in the sky.
And we take it so for granted. Yeah. I mean, obviously, there are some people who don't have access to it. It's a very privileged thing to be able to do. But the fact that it happens around you, the mind does not boggle and wonder when one sees an aeroplane in the sky. It's just normal. And like for the previous 60 million years of human evolution until 100 years ago, human beings could not fly. It was impossible.
In fact, it was probably just a big dream for a lot of people, and we always saw
being able to go invisible or being able to teleport.
Correct, and who knows which dreams we may be able to make reality soon. But just yesterday, I played a clip of a woman in the Australian outback, an Aboriginal woman who was explaining how she felt the first time she saw planes, and she would go and hide under trees. And this is in living memory. So it's not that difficult to imagine that, you know, maybe somewhere in the future we might be able to go invisible.
So imagine you've got
shoot things out of our hands.
Yeah, you've got
other,
so
other body parts. But imagine you have no idea about planes and you see your first one and it's this massive giant metal bird that makes an ungodly noise. How you would shit yourself.
Exactly, because it wouldn't be a pleasant noise. It's terrifying.
No, it's a more of a thing.
Speaking of noise, you know, like the Concorde was the most amazing thing when it comes to flight, and that was 1970s technology, which then obviously died. But one of the big problems was that whole sonic boom thing, there was so much protest around it. So when Concorde started, they thought, okay, we'll do the transatlantic, but it'd be really great to have the San Francisco-New York leg, and that'll be our big money spinner. But then somewhere in the middle of America, they were going to hear a massive clap every single day.
Oh, so they're flying over populated areas, and that massive explosion is just pretty disruptive.
People weren't very excited about it.
Catonians can deal with the noon gun once a day. You can deal with the odds.
Yeah, but there was
boom.
All this glamour around Concorde. Everyone thought it was the greatest thing in the world, but many people actually hated it. Like,
did anybody go to the Durban July?
No.
Did you go?
No.
No? Nobody went. I heard it was fantastic. I saw pictures on Instagram.
It's always a blast, though. Durban's so much better than Cape Town for this kind of event.
Well, it's also the only place in South Africa that's moderately hot.
Yeah.
So that's quite nice this time of year. But I saw lots of stuff on Instagram. And I follow Nati, and she looked very glamorous. And there were a lot of people dressed to the nines, and some people dressed really badly, but that also happens. You've got to expect that, right? We're not going to shame anybody this morning, but I'm sure that there were some people who shamed themselves.
But you're just
you know how it goes. You're nobody poured any drinks on anybody, because remember one Durban July, someone poured a drink on the president's head.
No, you're lying.
Yes, man. Don't
the
you remember?
Nerve.
There was that dude who got... Oh, yeah, no, he was found...
I actually vaguely do remember something.
Also,
was this Zuma?
President Zuma. Someone was on a balcony up above him and poured a drink on
his
head.
You'll die. I'll kill you. I have no time for that. That's mad disrespectful.
If someone poured a drink on your head, you'd be pissed off as hell. It happened to me.
It was on purpose, yeah?
Yeah? Oh, yes, I'm sure. I'm sure.
And
chances
then you
of it.
Claim what? Oh, yes, okay.
You remember
Daryl
that story.
Bienza.
There we go.
What happened? What was the outcome for Daryl?
He was found guilty of assault.
There we go.
After famously spilling a drink on the president back in 2011.
Thank you.
And then casually, he was found guilty and fined 8,000 rand.
And that was at the Durban July.
He was suspended at the July for three
he
years.
He is lucky he did not disappear.
And then in 2014, he went back to the Durban July.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's really a big fan of the Durban July.
He was like suspended.
Yeah, so I can't get into the Durban July, but next year I'm definitely going once my suspension is lifted.
And how do they keep track of him if he does go?
It's one of those oaks that's so like into Durban July, just calls it the July.
Yeah,
but I'm July. This year I'm just joining the July. What are you eating for the July? But I'm in training for the July.
The whole
I haven't
month,
had a carb in 4 months.
The whole month just means that event for him. Mm. Anyway, when we were at Henley the other day, someone said to me that you know you've had a good experience at Henley when you don't see a single race. And I think the same goes for the Durban July. If you haven't seen a single horse race, you know you're having a really great
the regatta,
Durban
right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's about everything but the racing.
Exactly.
It's a lovely part
people
of the
party,
world.
They drink, they have a good time, they
wear
good
hats.
Conversations, they wear
can't
hats.
Can't even smell the horses.
Dress up. No. You don't even. You wouldn't even know there were horses. There's just a bit of noise in the background. Of and you can I have another gin and tonic, please?
To block that noise out.
That's all you're interested in.
I've actually never been to the July or the Met.
But you
before.
Lived in... You were born in Durban.
Yeah, but it's not a thing for me.
Sure.
I mean, just like everyone from Durban rolls into a July now and then.
I mean, I thought a lot of people would. It's fairly big event in Canada.
I grew up in Durban, but I can't surf.
Yeah. Well, no, that's I'm not really disgusting. Surprised. I mean, but,
what? You'd never wrestled a shark?
You mean a rugby player or a thing in the water? Because I've got different odds on both of those.
Anyway, I will not take these stereotypes anymore. Thank you.
Oh, man. All right, well, we're pretty much out of time for this morning. I'll wrap it up with the un-news, and then we will leave you with a conversation we had with Mr. Gay SA just, I think it was a year ago or so. And you can get to meet him fresh and new. And then we'll also find well, at the time. And then we'll get into some other good stuff today on cliffcentral.com. You know, Wednesday's action-packed as always. Let's get to the most important headlines, the ones that other people are going to ask you about when you get to the coffee machine today. Here's all you need to tell them. The boys stuck in the Thai cave have all been saved. Hooray. Let's give them a round of applause. And the world rejoices. The Vatican, however, were a little bit upset they heard about the story so late. When they heard there were 12 young boys stuck in a cave, they were about to ready the troops and get in there with great gusto. Always rely on the Vatican. There hasn't been a lot of hype around Justin Bieber's engagement. We didn't even speak about this to Hailey Baldwin. Ellen, however, is set to interview them shortly to give the union some much-needed attention. Ellen, of course, is one half of a powerful same-sex marriage with Portia de Rossi and is happy that Justin and Hailey are now joining the club, so to speak. You know, as lesbians. England take on Croatia tonight in the second World Cup semi-final. English fans...
It's coming home.
It's coming home.
They will riot either way. Fans are confident that their team will go through, but they will have to defeat the world's most supported team to do so. Turns out the only ones that want it to go home are the people of England. The rest of the world are hoping Croatia will prevent this. We'll keep an eye too. So, good luck to both teams tonight. I can't believe it's almost time for the final. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Have an excellent day in the company of cliffcentral.com and be good, blah, 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 blah.
This is cliffcentral.com.